You're listening to a program created at IONS, the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Thank you for supporting our research in consciousness and its practical applications for education, healthcare, and a more sustainable world. For more information, visit us at www.noetic.org.
Welcome to the Conscious Living Series. I'm Lindsay King, and tonight our host is IONS President Marilyn Mandela Schlitz, and she will introduce her guests, Katya Peterson and Ken Homer. Welcome, Marilyn.
Well, thank you, Lindsay, very much, and good evening to everybody or whatever time zone you're on. I know we have a global audience, and I welcome you, and I'm very excited about tonight's presentation. First of all, to introduce Dr. Katya Peterson, who is directing the curriculum development for our Worldview Literacy Project and comes with an amazing background of experience and time in classrooms and working to take educational programs on innovative topics to scale to reach wide audiences. And so it's a real privilege to be working with you, Katya, and I'm so happy you could be here tonight. And
thank
also
you.
To welcome Ken Homer, who is the project manager on this project. He comes with great wealth of insight about dialogue and conversation and how it is that we can really begin to shift our understanding about our potentials through our interactions with one another. And he's come with a really great background of experience in helping to manage, you know, large projects and keep us working toward our goals. And so, again, I want to welcome you, Ken, and tell you how excited I am to have you part of this project and have you part of this program tonight.
Oh, thank you, Marilyn. That's a pleasure, and it's very great to be working with you as well.
Yeah, it's fun. What we're going to do tonight is have more of a conversation than an interview so that all of us can participate since we're working together on this project and helping to bring it to life. And so I thought if just to begin and say a little bit about the history of where the Worldview Literacy Project came from, and then to turn it over to Katya and Ken to really talk about where are we going next with the program. But historically, this work really comes out of the Institute of Noetic Sciences' interest in consciousness transformation and the research that we've been doing for nearly 40 years. But in particular, it was the result of a downtime when we had just completed the transformation project looking at the Living Deeply book as the final outcome of that phase of the research. And we had done interviews with masters from 60 different world traditions and talked with them about consciousness transformation. And then I was, over the holiday, looking at, you know, what some of my son's activities were as he was a Cub Scout at the time. And there was an About God requirement. And I looked at that requirement, and I just felt there was another way to introduce the concepts. And so I asked the Scout Master if I could take Skylar through our Living Deeply program, and it was this DVD with different practices from 9 different teachers. And he said, oh, that would be great, but could you do it with the whole den? And I said, well, I wasn't quite sure, and I sent letters to all the parents to make sure that they were comfortable with this and really looked at kind of a comparative religion perspective with these kids and really watched their eyes light up when they were exploring cultures and traditions that were vastly different than what they were used to. And the parents all agreed, 100% of them. One even asked if she could bring her mother, so we ended up with 3 generations there exploring this concept of worldview and worldview literacy. And it was out of that that the third grade teacher found out and invited me into the classroom, and then a sixth grade teacher, and then another sixth grade teacher. And it began to appear that we had something dynamic that teachers were interested in and that the students seemed really responsive to. But obviously, having, you know, a full-time job, it was hard for me to be in the classrooms like that. And a couple weeks later, one of our donors, our beloved Claire Russell, came to the Institute and she said, you know, it's really time for us to take this Living Deeply work and the transformation study into public schools. And I was like, oh, Claire, that couldn't be better timing. And so we were able, with her help and a grant through the Marin Community Foundation, through the Ray Benton Fund, to launch this program and to start building a curriculum that we could take into schools. And we have been doing this now for a few years, building a pilot program, testing it, continuing to do research, and to expand it so that last year we were out touching 1,500 students with this concept of worldview and the notion that we might be able to cultivate our worldviews in ways that are like a literacy, like a skill set. And so that was the sort of humble beginnings, and now with Katya and Ken on the team with us, we are able to now grow this thing into something that is flowering in many magnificent ways. So let me now turn it over to you, Katya, and tell us a little bit about what you're thinking about in terms of worldview and what is the core curriculum of a worldview literacy program.
Well, let's start with probably the simplest definition of worldview. And the way that I would explain it and describe it to the youth that we're working with, I would say something like it's the ways in which we all try to make sense and meaning of the world around us based on our experiences, our families, our communities, the cultures that we are in, the relationships we have. What kind of lenses are we looking at the world around us through? So that we can make some sense out of it. That's such an important part of our children's education today. And I truly believe that consciousness is an essential part to a paradigm shift that really will lead us to a healthier and more compassionate and sustainable world. So we really need to make the time for our youth to be encouraged, to be more open to exploring the world around them, through curiosity, their imagination, and really looking through the lenses, not of their own accord, but also through the lenses of others. And that's kind of the premise where we began. And then we had to stop and ask the question, so here we are, we live in a global society, we live in a world that is going full speed ahead with innovation and constant change, and we need to prepare our kids to work and live in a world that doesn't even exist yet. So how do we go about doing that? And Ken, so, yes.
Yeah, well, I wonder maybe Ken can then take us to the topic of how we begin to translate that. This idea that consciousness is important, consciousness matters, that it matters to kids, that how we see the world and how we experience it informs our model of reality and how we relate to one another. And how is that then being translated into a kind of curriculum? What, Ken, would you say about that?
Well, I think, you know, you're hitting on some really important points here, and one of the things that Katya mentioned is how quickly the world is moving. You know, when I was a kid, which was way back in the last millennium, you know, things moved a lot slower. There were communities were a lot more stable. The amount of people coming from other parts of the world was much slower. And now today, thanks to all the diasporas going on, we might find ourselves one day, you know, sitting there with our neighbors, and the next week suddenly we have a whole influx of people from different cultures and different countries that are suddenly in our communities, and they've got very, very different ways of looking at the world, and their practices are different, and their what they consider to be important is very different. So suddenly we're confronted with this need to broaden our understanding and to say, you know, these folks have got very legitimate ways of looking at the world that they're different than mine, but if I can understand that, then and they can understand where I'm coming from, then we can create a world that's going to work for us. But if we're afraid, if we constrict around old stereotypes and say, oh, you know, watch out for those people, then it's not going to work out very well for us. So what we're doing with the Worldview Literacy course is sort of creating a paradigm where everybody starts with understanding how they came to have their own worldview and the way in which their family and upbringing affected them and the types of cultural filters that were there. And then we broaden them out into looking and saying, now that I know where I come from, where do you come from? And how can I be in conversation with you in a way where I'm asking you questions based on curiosity and really wanting to understand what is important to you, what do you value, and looking for the areas of overlap so that I understand, okay, we have a place here that we can start to work from. We have a platform to build a future together that, as Katya said, will be a safer, saner, healthier world, something more sustainable than what we're seeing going on here right now.
Mm. One of the things I love about the curriculum, too, is the science base to it. So I'm hearing a lot about the cross-cultural aspects and how we're really being exposed from a cultural point of view to this kind of acceleration. And it's also clear in the curriculum that there is this new offering coming from things like cognitive neuroscience, where we're able to invite kids to see that we don't see things as we might think we are, and that in fact through things like inattentional blindness, there are tremendous amounts of things about the world going on around us that we don't ever see because our lens of perception, as Katya defined it, isn't tuned to that. And so maybe you could speak a little bit about some of the resources that are being drawn on to help young people to understand that they see the world through this lens of perception or worldview, and that there are many things we don't see as well as what we do.
I'll start, Ken, but I really would like to have our listeners also hear some of your perspectives. One of the things that we need to address with our young people, and we found that is really exciting for them, as they are growing up and they are operating under certain beliefs because of their experiences, because of the culture they're in, or because of their upbringing, it's interesting to see what happens to them when those beliefs, something comes along the way that totally shakes up those beliefs and it challenges them. And some of them know how to respond and to look at a new belief, to look at the world differently and ask the right questions and say, I wonder if there are things that I have not been able to see all this time. I wonder what it would be like if I experience life this way. And yet, a lot of young people, they don't have that sense yet. They don't have the tools that it takes to be able to look deep inside of them and to become more aware of those beliefs that exist out in the world that shook up theirs. So we are actually designing very specific lessons and practices. And I put emphasis in practice because we're going to create the space for them to practice along the way every new learning that they are taking in and internalizing. What are the practices that they need to go through in order for them to be able to ask the right questions? And so inquiry is also another big tool that we're going to be teaching the kids if indeed we want them to recognize that there are things that they don't see, and where are their blind spots, and what are the lenses do we want to look through in order to navigate more effectively in the world. Those are some of the initial tools that we're going to be teaching them. Ken?
Yeah, I think in addition to that, you know, our worldviews are the kind of thing that is they're like the glasses we wear, and after a while we forget that we're looking through glasses. So essentially they operate mostly outside of our awareness. So a lot of our curriculum is designed in ways to help people take a look, step back, and examine, how am I looking at this? What am I looking through? And by doing that, we give them different places. I like to call them platforms of observing, so that my habitual way of seeing things might include looking at it from two or three perspectives. By the time they've gone through this course, there's going to be a multitude of perspectives they'll be able to immediately go to and say, well, I can look at it like this, I can look at it like that, I can see how it is for me looking inside, I can see how it is for someone else, I can see how it applies to the whole context. And by using that model of self, other, and whole, and constantly looking for, if I shift my perspective, my awareness over here, how does it look? We're opening up a much greater range of options for people when they come up against problems that we are constantly dealing with. You know, we don't have all the answers, but we think we've got some new questions that reveal different ways of looking that are going to be a lot more productive and useful for people when they're confronted with traditional problems.
So it's pretty much an integral kind of program, as I am feeling it through your descriptions and how it's unfolding. So at one level, we're really looking at how young people can become more aware of their inner experience. And so there are certain reflection practices that are part of the program. And then there's that recognition that our individual perceptions are embedded within a culture or community. There's also the way in which there are physical aspects of practice that include breathing, and I think some of the heart math training has been informing some of the current lessons and how people can really begin to regulate their emotions and navigate those experiences that sort of cause us to be more reactive. Skills around that kind of thing. And then, again, to speak to the science base of it, drawing on some very interesting tools that things that can blow their mind and keep them interested in learning and engaging these questions, like optical illusions and short video assets that are very engaging. And so how are you seeing the various components of the curriculum fitting together as, you know, young people are learning about worldview literacy, and also the Train the Trainers program for people who are teaching this content?
The Train the Trainer program is essential because prior to them going to our children, our youth, to really teach these lessons and explore all these new ideas with them, we really would like to give them a sense of groundedness and an opportunity to explore their own worldviews, to ask their own questions, so that they can also build on their own sense of awe and curiosity and consciousness. So they totally prepare themselves, again, as self, and then looking to the children and to the world around them. We are going to be walking them through pretty much the same process as we will when we teach the lessons to the students, which I find really exciting. And I have done that in the past, and the teachers always say, this is so exciting when we actively participate in this process as co-learners and as co-designers prior to actually presenting any of this new material to the students. And I think that's pretty powerful when they examine their own wellness as well as what they are to pursue with the kids.
Well, you raise a really interesting point of observation that a lot of the people that are drawn to this curriculum are teachers and see the potential for it in their classrooms. But it's also people who are community group leaders who are expressing a strong interest in how they can take this content into their community groups. And, you know, working with adult populations, lifelong learning, can really begin to see the value of this kind of exercise. So maybe say a little something about, you know, the long view for the project as it relates to, you know, rolling this out for educators in classrooms,
yeah,
but also seeing the bigger picture.
I'd like to jump in on that one. You know, you mentioned a little bit of my background, and part of it includes a fair amount of doing corporate consulting. And I was one of the core team members who developed a dialogue process called the World Cafe. And in the course of 10 years of working on that, I came to realize that to be really effective in front of the room, the majority of the wisdom is actually out there in the audience. It's not in the presenters. So I sort of, along with Katia and several other people, we've learned that if we're talking more than about 20 to 25% of the time, we start to lose people's interest. So the entire curriculum is based around short little presentations and a lot of real juicy stuff for the people who are going through the program to be engaging with themselves and each other with. So it's very, very experiential and very much about what their experience is, not a lot of, you know, theory and memorization and stuff like that. And I think, having been working on this now for several months, we've delved into the archives of IONS, we've gone out online, we've got some really interesting, fun, and exciting things that we're putting into this that are going to hold people's attention at a very, very high level. And although the curriculum we're working on right now is specifically focused on high school students, that's really, if I were to, how would I phrase that? I'd say it's mostly the language is for high school students. The concepts, the application, it'll work for pretty much anybody. And I think anybody who looks at it is going to find themselves quite fascinated with this. We're just really focusing on making sure that it's presented in a way that is understandable by somebody who's in 9th or 10th grade. But that doesn't mean it's not applicable to somebody who's 40 or 50 or older, because especially if you're doing community group work or if you're working with people where there are differences in worldview or cross-generational, you're going to find a lot of meat in this.
And I, following what Ken just said, we have a lot of adults now who we have shared this information with, and they're saying, I wish I had this information, I had these tools and competencies when I was a young person, because here I am now in my 40s, in my 50s, I'm still trying to figure out the world around me, life as is, how to communicate more effectively with others. I'm just discovering that consciousness matters, that it's okay for me to celebrate not only what I know, but you know, how do I come to learn new things and experience new things in life? And so it's really music to my ears when I hear that, because we are really looking at this project as a gift that we would like to share with everybody out in the world and continue to grow with it as a living document. Because during its creation, we are also co-learning, and it's really exciting.
So let's hear a little bit about how people can engage the content, both if people are educators. We have some scholarships available to the Train the Trainers program. I think we have a training that's coming up at the IONS conference for community group facilitators. So tell us a little bit about what are some of the things in the immediate future and in the long term that can help people to understand how they can engage.
So the first thing we have coming up is a free day on July 20th. It's a pre-conference for the Institute of Noetic Sciences biannual conference here in San Francisco at the Westin on Market Street. We'll start at 9:30 and go till 4:30. And that one's actually getting pretty full. I think we're capping our attendance at 100 because of the size of the room, and we have 74 signups. So if you're interested, hustle, get onto the website and get registered there. As I mentioned, it's no cost for the day. And we'll spend an entire day looking at some of the ways in which worldview literacy informs our actions out in the world. Then there'll be two breakout sessions during the actual conference itself on Friday and Saturday for, I think, 2 hours. So if you're coming to the conference, make sure you look at your program and work your way in, you know, come and visit with us on that. And then on August 3rd through August 7th, which is a Wednesday through Sunday, we're offering a Foundations of Worldview Literacy instructor training, and it will be held at Earth Rise at IONS in Petaluma. We're going to create a learning community up there, as Katya was mentioning. We'll pretty much walk through the curriculum of the worldview literacy as if we were a group of both students and learners, really co-learners. There's no teachers here. We're all in the process of co-learning. And that will cover the whole gamut of everything that we're offering for worldview literacy. And as you mentioned, we do have some scholarship money available. There's a special teacher rate. So if you're an educator, whether you're working with a private school or charter school or a public school, you can make a case for pretty much any type of education. There's a special rate of $750. That's about $180 off the full price. And if you're able to pilot this in a classroom, we've got some additional scholarship money that can really dramatically lower the cost. So that's what's coming up in the immediate future. And then this fall, we'll also be offering and developing an online webinar-based training for those who can't make it to the face-to-face.
So a lot is going on with this project. How do you describe some of the aspects of the curriculum and the 15 lessons that you've been working so diligently on? What are some of the things that stand out to you that excite you about, you know, some of the assets or the components of the lessons?
Well, I'll share one of my absolute favorite components before we get into the actual names of the lessons that we are trying to content. What I am really excited about is the fact that we're going to be tapping into the curiosity of the children and giving them opportunities for real life practical application. So not only at the end of each lesson, because we don't want them to simply memorize this information, we want them to internalize it, they will be able to take it with them in their community and put to practice the new learning that they just acquired. And the way we really want it to happen is not come back with the correct answers as we would like to hear them. It's more based on their individual learning. What did I experience? What surprised me? What inspired me? What worked? What didn't work when I tested things out? And they will be coming back as a group. They will be sharing all their findings, and we will begin the new lesson based on what we just experienced. But then the most exciting part is after about, I would say, three quarters into the curriculum, the students will have an opportunity to get together in small groups and look deep inside themselves at what is out there in the world that inspires me. Where is that spark that gets me all excited, that I want to explore further? I want to learn more about. I want to contribute to the world more. And then as a group, they will be going out again into the community. Hopefully we'll have a lot of partners who would like to jump in and support this kind of learning. And then the students will be asked to find the most creative, innovative, fun way to gather the information, bring it back, and share it with the rest of us. And to me, that's really exciting because we're taking theory and learning and creating this lifelong, fun learning experience where the kids then bring it into practical, real-life application.
One of the fun things for me has been listening to the young people and the teachers and the community group leaders, but really listening to the youth talk about how this curriculum is different for them from other things, and that no one had ever asked them before, where do your beliefs come from, or how do you form your opinions, or what are the various ways that you experience your worldview? And watching them, I will use the word struggle in some respects, but to really explore what is something that they hadn't thought much about from their own first-person perspective before, and to be then learning how to share that and to also watch within themselves what comes up for them when a new concept emerges or they begin to see the power of their consciousness to influence, you know, what upsets them or what liberates them, what excites them. So those things where we're really beginning to translate the change model that came out of the transformation work and to begin to apply it in a curriculum like this that we continue to do research on. So just maybe a quick overview of the change model as it relates to this curriculum is that through the research, really looking at how does consciousness transform? How are we capable of changing? And obviously there are, you know, many answers to that question, many approaches to it, but through our research, we really began to look at this noetic change model, what we heard from all of the people that we interviewed and all the survey data that we collected with thousands of people is that it's often and almost always a first-person experience, a noetic, direct experience that allows people to begin to question their assumptions and to think in a new way. It's very possible that people will deny that experience. It may be that it's too painful. Pain is one of the great catalysts for helping people to transform. But it can also be these wonderful opportunities to just get these epiphany moments, these moments of awe that I think the curriculum is also trying to embody. And obviously people, we've seen through the research, can deny these experiences and maybe become even more rigid in their original belief system. But the majority of people then can become excited and curious, and particularly young people where you're inviting that exploration. And so then encouraging the questioning and the engagement with the new ideas. What we found in our change model also was that fundamental to almost every teacher and every individual we surveyed was the importance of practice. And Katya keeps bringing this up as fundamental to the curriculum, but inviting young people to build new practices, new habits, really cultivating a greater awareness of their intentions and where they place their attention, how it is that they are building new habits and practices as lived experience. And then ultimately, again, to reiterate what you said, Katya, about then taking it out into the community, these become ways of expressing it. The change model also talks about this move from a me to a we, where the young people can become more aware of their embeddedness and their engagement in their communities. And it's also clear that one needs a healthy me from the we, and so how do we really help young people to have the resilience and the inner skills and capacities to ask questions that may sometimes be uncomfortable or maybe, you know, move them out of what is their assumption field, as it were. And then ultimately, I think this change model speaks to the fact that individual transformation is really the catalyst for social transformation, and then how it is that we can begin to shift whole-scale systems like the educational system, medical system, science, society, all of these things become informed by this kind of change model. So the curriculum has been built in this model and allows these young people to, in a systematic way, over time, with one another in this kind of shared learning community, to begin to really express this process of transformation. And ultimately, then, this is testable because the major support for the project now comes from the CRINS Foundation. And they're very interested in making sure that we're evaluating the efficacy of these various practices. You know, from the simplest things, do their academics improve? Does attendance improve? But also we're interested in looking at things like cognitive agility and flexibility, reactivity. There are different ways that research can help inform that. And as we're doing the research with the development of the curriculum, we can be improving it. So I like that the two of you are often talking about this as a living curriculum. And I think that's a really important point. Maybe you'd like to speak to that a little bit.
No, I think, you know, your earlier question really caught my attention about what's exciting, because as we're under some significant time pressures to get some work completed here, and sometimes, you know, we get caught up in the work, and this conversation re-energizes me and reminds me of how exciting this program actually is and how much I wish, you know, I am in that same position of I wish I had this stuff when I was growing up. So Katya and I are both pouring everything that we can think of that what's the most useful stuff that we've learned. Everything that we're doing here is how do we take what we've learned that is very useful there and put it into simple format that people can get and have it be very easy for them, that there's nothing wrong. You will never, as a student in this curriculum of any age, encounter anything that makes you wrong. It's very appreciatively based. We're working with strengths that people already have. We're asking them to engage at the level that they're able to engage in and to develop along their lines in a way that feels natural to them. And just that whole stance around the unfolding of somebody in a context of learning I find to be tremendously exciting. And I think that's really one of the fundamental differences about the way we're designing this from other things that I've been exposed to in terms of curriculum. I find that really exciting.
And the other exciting part for me is when the individual students notice the shift in them and in the way they speak, the way they behave, the way they pay attention to their intention that they put out in the world. And then from there, when they realize, they look around the room and they realize the power of the collective shift, it's really powerful to see. Because that's the inspiration to create a movement so that they can, in turn, create the change that they would like to see in the world.
Well, speaking of you were participating in the Earth Day celebrations just a couple weeks ago and saw some really engaged students who were taking the worldview literacy ideas and expressing them in the form of what you just said, being the change they want to see in the world. And maybe you describe that experience a little bit.
Buddy, you worked a lot more on that than I did.
On doing Earth Day?
Yeah.
Well, what we decided to do was join Earth Day, the Earth Day event, and invite as many of the people who were happened to be passing by our booth to come and really talk to us about how do I know what I know? How do I view the world? Through which lenses do I see the world? In a sense, exploring worldview with us. And we explore questions like, if I were to think about 20, 30, 40 years from now, and ask the question, what kind of a world do I wish to live in? What can I do today on my own and as a large community? What can we do? How can we contribute to make sure that that world exists? And the most fascinating thing happened. As the young people were working on creating their art to put their words and their images on leaves, which they were then transferred to a big drawing of a tree, they were noticing that a lot of homeless people were surrounding us. And pretty much everybody was ignoring them. Until the young people started a conversation and asking, I wonder how they feel that we are all gathering over here experiencing something this beautiful and powerful and nobody's speaking to them. So I simply asked the question, what do you think we can do differently to make sure that they feel included? So one of the teenagers got up and went and asked one of the homeless people, would you like to join us in this experience? Would you like to come and draw with us and talk with us? And all of a sudden, here we are because of one leader and then another young person who followed and asked yet another homeless person. We were surrounded by all these homeless people who were telling their stories, sharing their perspective of the world around them and how they're experiencing it. And I think the most touching moment for the students was when at the very end, the homeless gave them hugs and said goodbye, and one of them so brilliantly said, thank you so much for seeing us, because most of the time we feel invisible. That was a major shift for the kids. And one of them said, I will never see homeless people in the street the same way again. And that was a beautiful moment.
That is beautiful. Thank you. Well, I think that maybe each of you have some closing remark that you'd like to make, and then we'll open it up to questions.
Ken?
Well, I'd just like to thank you and Lindsay for inviting us on this show and, again, express what a great pleasure it is to be working on a project of this magnitude, and it's very exciting, and I can just see so many wonderful potentials. I feel like we've just sort of come home to an amazing project, and I think when we're done here with this first part, because eventually we will be bringing another version out for universities and then professional settings, but starting with the high school students feels like a really good start. And you know, my wife and I chose not to have children, but I feel like this is my way of taking care of the generation of children that I did not have. So for me, it's a very personal, profound way to bring whatever gifts I have forward and leave them on for the next generation. And I'm very grateful for that opportunity to Marilyn and to the Institute. So thank you very much.
Beautiful.
And I also would like to thank you, Marilyn, and the whole team at IONS for all the incredible work we have been doing, because without that vision, without all the research that has been done, we wouldn't be here today really taking it to the next level and translating all this beautiful work into this curriculum. And one of the closing remarks I would like to make is for all of us adults, all this is wonderful stuff that we're creating, but we need to come forth and really stand by our youth, by our children, and invite them to the table, invite them to become not only the co-learners, but appreciate their curiosity, appreciate their ability to learn in different ways, appreciate the fact that what they believe in their heads as well as in their hearts really matters. And what fascinates them and gives them a sense of awe is so important, because after all, they are really the new generation of visionaries, the generation that will take what we are doing today far beyond our expectations and anything we have been able to do. So I would like to invite all of you to that table so we continue this conversation and this incredible, meaningful work.
Thank you. And also just to acknowledge Cassie Veaton and Kathleen Erickson Freeman for all of their dedication to this project. So, okay, Lindsay, let's go ahead and open up the phone lines.
Okay. We now have a great opportunity to ask Katya and Ken questions. So if you have a question ready, please press 1 on your phone keypad now. Again, just press 1 on the phone keypad. And our first question comes from Philippe. Philippe, you have the mic.
Yeah, well, hello there. Okay, I'm very interested in this process. And as far as the literacy, world literacy training that happens for the teenagers, could you summarize the actual, you know, just explain the actual environments in which this training takes place, like classroom, et cetera? Could you just summarize that for us?
Yes, actually, it can happen both in a classroom setting or within a community setting, as long as there is a space where the students can have the opportunity to gather in small groups and large groups so they can experience the lessons, and also keeping in mind, because there is so much depth and so many layers in each lesson, it might take 2 or 3 or 4 sessions to complete something. So we, on purpose, avoided giving it time, because we know the pressure that a lot of educators have and all of us who work with young people. And we did not want to put a boundary of this has to be taught in 50 minutes. So it's designed to break down into smaller parts, and yet one piece is built on another, so there is a sequence that makes sense to them, and the skills that they are being, one is built upon the next, so it makes a lot of sense for them to internalize.
Oh, I'll just add to that one quick thing, which is there are a lot of video assets in this, so having a room where you've got a projector and people can see the video would be pretty important.
And it's also web-based, so there has to be computer access, at least at this first stage of the curriculum.
And we also we need to point out that it's very experiential-based, so the students will be doing a lot of hands-on activities. They will be using body practices as well as art. We're trying to tap into as many ways of learning as possible so we can engage every student.
Okay, thanks for that question. Our next question will come from Edith. Edith, you have the mic.
Yes, I am calling from Canada, and my question relates to the issues that in schools, when you want to put in a pilot project, you have to get the the parents' consent. And I am wondering if you have any difficulties with that.
Well, just to speak for the last couple of years, what we were able to do is work with teachers who were bringing that into their curriculum. We haven't formally introduced the research component, and for that there will need to be consents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Katya, can you speak to that more directly?
Yes, in my past work where I have done something similar, the way I have introduced it to the parents is by sending a letter home that explains thoroughly and in a very positive light, inviting them to become our partners in this journey and why it's so important for their children to be able to learn these skills. And I have to say, I have yet to have a parent who wrote back to me and said, absolutely not, I do not want you to teach my child how to navigate through life in an effective way. I want them to be unhappy. I want them to be miserable. I don't want them to fit in. So don't even talk to them. So I have never found that yet, I'm happy to say, but I am very proactive that way by sending the invitation, and then I even ask them, if you have any questions, any concerns, please do call. We will be delighted to meet and discuss it further. And that has, so far has really served us well.
Did you actually invite them into the ongoing program with the kids?
Yes. Yes, we did, and as a matter of fact, eventually, I'm a true believer in parent engagement, because again, it's not enough to just give the tools to the children or have the teachers be the only ones or the community members taking care of this. The parents need to be aware of the same information so they can be that support system that the children need. And so that's one of our hopes, that we will can expand it in terms of parent involvement. And I absolutely adore it when parents come in and join us. So one of the pieces that we forgot to mention is there will be material that will go home as a home assignment. So indirectly, the parents will be able to hear about this and learn about it through their children. But ultimately, I would love to see them be more actively involved.
Well, that's a wonderful idea. My second question relates to my own difficulty, because I am in Canada, but in Quebec, which is on the east side of the North American continent. And going to California is, to any of these training programs, is quite pricey for me. So I am wondering how I could get hold of this program.
Well, as Ken mentioned,
I can take
go ahead and tell her about the, go ahead and answer that. We have an answer.
Sure. We do have an answer for that. The answer is that.
One at a time, please.
Sure. As soon as we've completed the rest of the curriculum here and gotten it ready for the instructor training in August, after we've completed that, then we will begin working on a web-based training, because we realize that, of course, not everybody can come. It's only small groups that can make it out to California. So in order to get this thing scalable and out into as many classrooms as possible, we're going to turn to the web. So I don't really want to commit to a time frame, but I'm thinking somewhere October, November, we should have at least the starting point of that. Mm-hmm. So we can start to invite people in, and you know, then it won't matter where you are. You can log on, and we'll try and stagger the times so that, you know, different time zones will be able to log in, or we'll have it recorded so that people can have access to it, and the physical travel will not be a barrier.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
I hope you have my address. I mean, my email address.
Oh, make sure we get it. You can write to us at noetic.org. Ken, what's the address that's best to communicate with us?
You can just send an email to me, K Homer, H-O-M-E-R. My name is Ken Homer, so it's khomer@noetic.org. And just mention you're interested in the web training, and I'll be glad to write back to you. And then
Noetic.org. Okay. Thank
it will be
so
delightful
much.
To connect with you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Edith. Our next question comes from Amy. Amy, you have the mic.
Hello. I'm calling from far north Australia, and my question is the one Edith just asked, how can I desperately please get hold of this? So thank you so much, and I'll look forward to that webinar training coming out, and I'll send an email to Ken as well.
Oh, well,
excellent.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, indeed. We're very
How's the winter down there?
It's about 26 degrees Celsius, so I think that's about 78 Fahrenheit. Very cold at the moment for us.
Well, we'll send you lots of
my jeans your way.
I had the privilege of being in New Zealand last year and talking about worldview literacy with the group there, and I think there really is something about the difference in the way the water spins that I found that trip to be very transformative, literally. So being on the other side of the world is a physical way of transforming our consciousness, I think.
Oh, well, Amy, maybe if you'll host us, we can come and visit you.
There we go.
Oh, yes, please. You're always welcome. You're always welcome. And can I just say how grateful I am that you've put yourselves out here and done this. Since I was a high school student and struggling with, you know, what is the world and how do I think and where do I fit, I've wanted to be able to go back and do something for other young people who are in that space. And just looking, I just found this last night, which was your morning this morning, that this webinar, this teleseminar was on. And so I just feel it's just this divine serendipity that I've found it. And I'm so looking forward to be able to taking this forward down here.
You just gave me goosebumps. You made me very, you made us very happy. So anything we can do to support you, just please stay in touch.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. Our next question comes from Amelia. Amelia, you have the mic.
Thank you. This is very exciting and really appreciate hearing about it. I would like to know if you could give me some examples of how you reinforce intuition with and knowings with the students.
Let me see, how would I answer that? One of the things that is core in this course is learning to pay attention to the signals that we're getting from our bodies and our nervous systems. And that would include your intuition. Although we don't necessarily have a practice of, at least at this stage of the game, of working with intuition in that way and reinforcing it, there's a lot. Almost every lesson has some type of check in with your body. And so we're constantly reinforcing, be in touch, be aware of what's going on. And so if you're going to pay attention to your intuition, it usually comes as some sort of physical sensation, that little niggling feeling of there's something up here. And so as we learn to pay more attention, then we can become more open to that. And I do this myself. It's like, how often do I do a body scan and pay attention to my body? And then I get this feeling, you know, I should actually take a different route to downtown today because I think there's going to be a traffic jam over there. And then, of course, I don't do it, and there's a traffic jam. So I'm learning. What I want to learn is, how do I, now that I have a feeling that I should use my intuition, how do I actually follow through on it? That's a whole other lesson, I think, at least for me.
And in one of the questions that I always ask the students is, how many of you ever had that gut feeling that something was about to happen and you didn't listen, and then it did happen, and you said out loud to yourself, I wish I had paid attention. I wish I had done this different. I knew it. Or simply you just said, I knew this was going to happen. And, of course, most everybody raises their hand. And so we talk a lot about that, what that gut feeling means. And that's a word that they can associate more clearly with intuition. And I actually have them spend a week paying attention to that part of them. When, you know, there's a nagging feeling, there is a sensation that somebody that they care about is trying to really stay in touch with them and so on and so forth. And the practice of paying attention to the cues that our brain is sending to our body is a very important part of this lesson. And the more they practice it, and that's something else we always tell them, this is a lifelong learning experience. It's not something we learn one or two sessions. So let's practice it again and again until it becomes part of you and begin to trust that intuition and pay attention to what's happening in life.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
I noticed that in a room full of people, there'll be a certain number in some of the experiences I've had where there's a group that will really relate to the gut feeling and others will tap their heart and say, I just knew it, or they'll tap their forehead, or, you know, they do it in different ways. People are really designed somewhat differently to
right.
So I was curious about if you were reinforcing that multiplicity of ways that people get their knowings.
Definitely. I think that's key, because we don't want them to say there is only one way of knowing. There are many ways of knowing and many ways of learning. So we really do tap into that and support it so that the children, especially teenagers who already feel that there's something strange about them, they don't fit in, we want to make sure that we begin with their strengths and where they are coming from. And each one of them does indeed pay attention to that gut feeling very differently.
Well, that's great to be reinforced in reinforcing this. I'm just delighted.
Great.
Thank you
for calling.
Okay, thanks, Amelia, for your question. And we're getting close to the top of the hour, so we'll turn the mic over to Marilyn.
All right. Well, I just am completely inspired by all of the amazing work and by the community of people that we're exploring these questions with. That's really the kind of catalytic coherence that will foster this kind of tipping point that I think all of us are trying to manifest. Another thing to mention is that we will have a transformative education town hall meeting on the Wednesday in San Francisco of the conference. We're also intending to do a set of regional events next year that will include worldview literacy, and so people may have the opportunity to engage with us in places other than California, and as well then the web-based programs that we're designing. So I just want to thank Ken and Katya very much for the passion and the vision that you bring to this project. I'm deeply grateful. And to thank you all for listening and for caring about all the ways in which consciousness matters.
We hope you enjoyed this program from IONS. Located in Petaluma, California, the Institute of Noetic Sciences is a nonprofit membership organization that conducts scientific research into the potentials and powers of consciousness. To learn more about IONS, please visit us at www.noetic.org or call toll-free 877-769-4667.